Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening. Welcome to the Tattered Cover. Thank you for supporting your independent bookstore. Tom is a former Rhodes Scholar who spent much of his youth on a ranch near Colorado Springs. His writing reflects his great passion for nature and the spiritual values of the natural world, as well as his belief in the power of every person. Please join me in welcoming T.A. Barron, the author of Merlin's Dragon, Doomraga's Revenge.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm so glad to be back here and to see many familiar faces. And I'm really delighted to see some brand new faces as well. I am particularly glad always to come to the Tattered Cover. I have a couple of new fun stories to share with you. But first of all, really, let's just give our thanks to this wonderful place for convening, as it always does, a real community event. It's a special place, the Tattered Cover. It's not really a bookstore. It is that, but it, and that's what pays Jinx's lunch money. But at the same time, it's more than that. It's really a temple of literacy, I guess you could say, a convention hall for members of the community, and a place for people to come and be safe and thoughtful and inquiring and creative. So let's imagine together. But first, let's give a hand to the Tattered Cover. Now, some of you may know that once a long time ago, I was lucky enough to meet one of the most wonderful writers who's ever lived, and who was a very wise woman, Madeline L'Engle. She and I became good friends, and I was just blessed with every opportunity that we had to have conversations together. But one night over dinner, she really threw me for a loop. We were at her apartment in New York City, and she stopped eating in the middle of her spaghetti supper and looked across the table at me and said, "You know, Tom, there are three essential rules for writing a great novel." And I, of course, looked at her and dropped my fork and leaned across the table and said, "Okay, tell me, what?" And then she said, after a good long pause, "Unfortunately, nobody knows what they are." So that's the essential wisdom that I can give you today still about how to write a great novel is, really, I'm still discovering. I'm working on the first rule at this point. But if she says there are three out there, we're going to keep on the pursuit. Now, let me segue to a story about another wise woman. And this is my youngest daughter, Larkin, who is 12. And this still gives me the shivers when I think about it. Last spring, when we were walking on the open space, the Boulder County open space near where we live, we were just walking together with the dogs. And out of the blue, like a smart 12-year-old, she came up with one of those questions that is a true, absolute zinger. And this is what she said. She just turned to me, and I wasn't expecting anything at all. She said, "Dad, you spend a lot of time writing stories. Well, how is making a story like making a life?" Now, that's a question. And, you know, those bright 12-year-olds, you really have to watch out for them. And of course, it took me back a bit, but I took a deep breath and I said, well, you know, the thing is about whether you're making a story or making a life, you start with what you're given. And you start with some elements and some pieces of what will become the story. And if it's your life, you really start very similarly with what you're given, the family you have, the place you grow up, the values you grow up with. And you put those together in the very best way you can. And the truth is, in both a story and a life, you are the author. It's up to you to tell the very best story you can, in given all the pieces that you're given. And everybody's story is going to be different. Everybody's story is going to be based on different kinds of questions and ideas and searchings and yearnings, dreams, fears, hopes. But everybody's story is important. And everybody's story is at its core heroic. There's something heroic about the human life. There's something positive that all of us can do with our lives, even if it's small, unnoticed kindnesses that are really, frankly, what make the world go around. But we all get to write our story. So I say that as really just a little bit of wisdom from a 12-year-old. But I also think that's perhaps a good way to introduce my books, because as many of you know, all my books, whatever size, shape, genre they come in, they all feature a young hero. All of them. Whether it's my picture books about young kids, the story High as a Hawk that I know some of you know. That's a story, you have that, Jinx, right? A story about a girl right here in Colorado who did one of the most difficult, really horribly difficult things anybody could imagine. She climbed Long's Peak back in 1906 and took with her the greatest guide of the day, Enos Mills. And actually, in the course of climbing that peak with her true grit, she inspired that great old Scotsman to redouble his efforts to try to protect that place. And he succeeded finally. And that's why it's now called Rocky Mountain National Park. But it's a true story, 1906. Now, that is a little picture book with brilliant illustrations by Ted Lewin, who's a famous and really cherished painter for a good reason. And then it's also true of my chapter book, Tree Girl, about a brave girl named Anna who has to figure out who she really is. It's also true about the trilogy about Kate, who goes to outer space in Heartlight, or down to the bottom of the sea in the Merlin Effect, or back in time to find the mystery of a lost tribe of Indians in The Ancient One. It's also true of the Lost Years of Merlin books, a story that begins with about as far away from a great wizard as you can get, right? It starts with a boy who is much more like a wet rag than a great wizard, but he ultimately becomes the greatest wizard of all times, the fellow we know and love named Merlin. So you can see in every one of these stories, and it's true with everything else I've written, a hero in the center. It could be a girl, it could be a boy, or it could be a little creature. And in the Great Tree of Avalon books, my most complicated trilogy, you have many young heroes. And I see several faces here of people who've enjoyed and gotten to know those characters. But whether it's Scree from the Eagle Folk or Ellie, the youngest apprentice priestess at the Order of Avalon, or Tamwin, the wandering wilderness guide, Brianna, the elf maiden, all of those people and many more, each of them has to write their own story inside the world of Merlin's Avalon. So let me now introduce you to the most unlikely hero I've ever written about. And I think some of you already have met this character, but let me introduce him. For those of you who haven't, his name is Basil. And to really demonstrate what Basil's up against, I need a volunteer. How about you? You look brave and bold. What's your name, young man?
Nicholas.
Okay, now Nicholas, turn around and face the audience. Raise your right hand. This is going to be really challenging now. Are you up for this?
Yeah.
All right. He's a brave guy. Now, fold down all your fingers except your littlest one. Fold them down into your fist. Okay. Now, can everybody get a look at Nicholas's little pinky finger? Okay. Clear look. All right. That is how big my hero, Basil, is when this story begins. He's only as big as Nicholas's little finger. Thank you so much, Nicholas. You did a great job. Let's give Nicholas a hand. That was positively heroic. Well done, Nicholas. Now, Basil is only as big as Nicholas's little finger when he starts out the story of Merlin's Dragon, this book. This is the story of an unlikely hero. And at the very beginning, he spends his whole time, every day, every night, trying just not to be eaten, consumed, stepped on, destroyed, humiliated by somebody bigger. And finally, it turns out that the little fellow who is really always wondering, who am I really? And wouldn't it be amazing to be something larger, something bigger? He is this character right here on the cover. But he has big dreams, as little as he is. And it turns out he becomes the one character in all of Merlin's Avalon who has a chance to save Merlin's life. And when he does what he does in book one, Merlin gives him a chance to change, to gain, as Merlin puts it, a body as big as your heart. And so with that, little Basil becomes Basil Garad, the greatest dragon of all times, whose wings are as big as a valley and whose body is the size of a mountain. Basil Garad is feared even by other dragons. But the trouble is, with size and power comes responsibility. And it turns out Basil, now Basil Garad, the only person who still calls him Basil is Merlin, his great friend, has three humongous challenges facing him in this book. In book two, Merlin's Dragon, Doomraga's Revenge, little Basil, now great Basil Garad, has to face these three daunting obstacles. First of all, Avalon has broken out into warfare. There are people and creatures who want to destroy this world and actually conquer it. And the best way to do that is to set people against themselves and other creatures against themselves. In a way, it's a bit of a presaging of what happens later in the Great Tree of Avalon. But in Merlin's Dragon 2, this war threatens to destroy all the magic, all the creatures, all the places that Basil has come to love. Second, Merlin, his greatest friend and the one true, undaunted power in all of Avalon, has a terrible thing happen to him that I don't want to tell you what it is to spoil it, but I will tell you that it's so difficult and so painful for Merlin that he's not going to be there to help Basil solve the problem. And then third, Basil faces the greatest challenge of all. In fact, the greatest disaster that can befall any man or any dragon. He falls in love. What can I say? So now he's really in deep trouble. Nicholas, your dad will explain it to you later on. This is, so all at once, now Basil has these three enormous challenges. Frankly, when you're at the height of the book here, you will think it is completely impossible for Basil to survive. That's why stories come in trilogies, by the way. And 1 year from now, I'll be back here at the Tattered Cover to tell you about the final conclusion, book three. And let me now just wrap up about that. And then I'd love to open it up to you for any questions you might have. Because there's something special I'd love to tell you about book three. When that book is here at the Tattered Cover, it will be the final book in a 12-book cycle about the saga of Merlin's world. And that cycle is actually will have taken me by next year. How old are you, Nicholas?
Nine.
Okay. It will. Nicholas is 9 and a half. It will have taken me almost twice as long as you have been alive to write those 12 books. It's taken me, it will be 18 years. So it's an enormous feeling of both completion and, I must say, a little poignant feeling of bittersweet to have finished the 12-book cycle. And it will end with the final third volume of Merlin's Dragon. So you'll have the 5 books of The Lost Years of Merlin. Book one is the one that's being made into a film now. Then you go to book one of Merlin's Dragon, and that trilogy is the middle years of Avalon. And then you have The Great Tree of Avalon, which is the great climactic trilogy. So, and there's one other book. If you've done your edition, you've counted up 11. The 12th is going to be a compendium volume that will be called The Book of Merlin. That'll have all the secret backstories of more than 200 characters and magical places that run throughout all the Merlin books. So that's going to be fun. I'm hoping it's a real treasure for people. It'll have all my maps. It'll have all the magical objects. It'll have all the secrets and lots of backstories you have never heard. The kinds of things that I needed to know up in my writing attic to write about, but that didn't need to come into the story. But now you'll get to find out all kinds of quirky, amazing, unexpected things. Like, why Babdkatha, the Ogre's Bane, the great warrior of the Great Tree of Avalon, and someone about whom many legends were spun as the fiercest of warriors defending villages against the attacks of ogres. Why was she afraid of snow? Things like that. So, or why was the Haunted Marsh once a Garden of Eden-like place, so beautiful that even the perfume from its flowers had a magic of its own? How did it become the Haunted Marsh? Things like that you'll find out in the Book of Merlin. Okay, now I really am going to stop, and I'm happy to sign books for anybody, and most of all, have a great rest of the evening. It's been wonderful to see you tonight. Thank you for coming.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.